This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSiN, the sports betting network. We welcome you back on a Friday. Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. Hope you're doing well. We bring in our good friend. Of course, he runs the race and sports book at the Borgata, the best property over there on the East Coast in Atlantic City. He is Thomas Gable, so we say hi to TG, and we should start with some controversy. Thomas, you have been a long supporter of the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson, Palm versus the big guy, and we had a situation on Tuesday where Dustin took the L and didn't handle it well. And then after the program, Mike Palm sent us a group text saying that he had spoken to you, and you said that Dustin was terrible. I then texted you, and you said, I didn't even hear the segment. And then you went back and watched it later in the day. Can we clear some of this up?
Yeah. I'm glad that we're covering this, because I wanted to bring this up too. So that is absolutely true. I was not listening to this live when it was happening. But I knew that it ended, because as soon as it ended, I started getting text messages from you and from Palm about what had transpired. So I said I would go back at some point that evening and listen to it, which I did. So let me say this. I assume from the segment watching it that you kind of put in the mercy rule at that point. Was there still questions?
Yeah, I waved the white flag. I had to call the match.
That's it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I had to call the match. I didn't think it was his strongest outing.
I understand, but I still think you should have let him continue if there are questions, you know, that he had been prepared, had been preparing for. So, you know, but again, hey, you're the judge on this, so that was your call. But I would have liked to have seen Dustin continue, and I don't think Dustin was as bad as everybody made him out to be either that day. So, probably Palm would have gotten a win from me, yes, but I don't feel like that the mercy rule should have been in effect for him at all. And no, I never did say that he was terrible to Mike Palm. That is completely untrue.
Yeah, look, Thomas.
I think you're probably right. Can I just say quickly, Dustin, he's probably right. I probably shouldn't have called the match. So Gable, who's right down the middle, he's fair. But I should say this. We should all have somebody that supports you like Thomas Gable does. The world would be a better place.
We are Rough Riders together, me and Thomas Gable. Look, Thomas, I appreciate all your kind words. Like, if Patrick was Gary Bettman, we wouldn't have a Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals. He would have called it when Florida went up 3-0. Now we have a chance at a Game 7 here. So I wasn't given my chance a moment of history, a chance to come back and slay the dragon that is Mike Palm. Secondly, do you feel my argument, though, is being overlooked by Patrick, who's very flexible with that clock on Mike Palm's arguments, by the way. But my argument about the fact that Palm didn't follow the rules of not one but two answers and somehow won them.
That correct. So you definitely had a point there. And again, listen, if you guys allow me, I will be out there probably. I know, Patrick, you take your leave of absence typically in July that you like to call a vacation. I assume that's going to happen this year. So that first week when you guys are back, I hope to be out there, and we'll certainly sit in there and help you judge this, because if something like that were to occur, I would absolutely take into account, like, Dustin is answering the question as it should be, and Mike Palm is deviating from that. Mike Palm will be knocked for that.
Okay. I got a lot of thinking to do. Thomas, I consider you like my most reasonable friend, and the criticism is worthy. So I will recalibrate, and next Tuesday I will. Now, you did say you were a little taken aback by the big guy, how he ended the segment. I mean, he rushed off the stage.
Little,
you said at least
that was,
he
that was
you
a little
were
shocking.
Back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a
it
little
was
shocking
a...
that he did kind of storm out there, and I'm just glad that there was no bleeps or anything like that that were needed from the censors. But he was obviously passionate about it, and just to kind of like lead into what's happening tonight, I kind of enjoy his take that he is enjoying the fact that Canadians haven't won the cup in such a long time, and he's still rooting for Florida's here. So I like that, and I don't think he should get dinged for that.
Okay, I agree with both of you. I've got to recalibrate. Now, who are they betting tonight? Just so you know, we're a Panthers show. We all bet the Panthers heavy. We thought we were good at 3-0. Talk about tonight. Which way are they going?
Well, your followers must be listening to you here, because it's been a lot of Panthers money, especially today. Oilers are favored, $1.20 favorites, total 5.5, and that's pretty even action on the total. But certainly the Oilers being in the role here of favorites, everybody's kind of looking at taking the even money on the Panthers, and I think probably with good reason, because if the Oilers do win this game tonight, I mean, psychologically, where are the Panthers going to be at going into Game 7? Now, at least they would go home and have that Game 7 at home. But to be up 3-0 and then what that does to a team psychologically where suddenly now it's 3-3, I get it. Like, this is kind of the night where you figure the Panthers have to kind of get it done. And listen, for somebody who was pretty much a shoo-in for the Conn Smythe with Bobrovsky, last two games, very disappointing. And, two games ago was just a terrible performance from him. I still thought he might have had a shot if Florida had won the last game and he could have held it to a goal or so. But obviously he has to be better tonight. And we'll see here how this all goes. But, right now the bettors are certainly leading the Panthers way.
Okay. The NBA is a wrap. How did you end up with the finals?
So we were a small loser to Boston in the futures market, and that was, they're the number one power-rated team all season, basically, and, the prices on them were short. So you didn't have a lot of liability building up, even though they were taking so much action through the year. And, even going into the finals when they were, I think, a $2.20 favorite, we opened them up for the series price against Dallas. You still have people laying out five, even six-figure wagers on them, laying to 220. So we small loser to them overall, but nothing concerning at all. And now we go into an interesting offseason. NBA offseason is always interesting, and we already had, obviously, the Lakers news yesterday with Redick being announced as the new head coach there for them. Not that I think that really changes anything for them in terms of odds, or the West is just a really good conference in the NBA, and they have a lot of competition, and Redick's going to have his work cut out for him. Not to say I'm not going to knock the guy because he doesn't have NBA coaching experience. There have been others who have stepped into head coaching roles in the NBA with no coaching experience previously. But obviously we all know why he got that job.
He does a podcast with LeBron James.
Yeah. And listen, he gives hope to podcasters everywhere that maybe one day they can also step into the NBA coaching ranks.
That's the line of the day right there. Are they betting the Euros? Are they betting the soccer at the Borgata?
Yeah. The Euros have been pretty good so far. And, it's nice that we have this tournament going on now, especially with the NBA all wrapped up, and it just gives us another option besides Major League Baseball and the WNBA. It's been a nice little draw, and it brings people into the book during the day and to watch these games and bet the games. Typically during the day, there's not a ton of people hanging around. So when you can fill it up with some soccer fans, it's always a good thing, especially in the summertime.
Being so close to Philly, I'm curious, do you have liability on the Phillies this year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, You can pretty much figure out how our day goes in Major League Baseball if you just look at the box scores of the Mets, the Yankees, and the Phillies. And if all three of those teams win in a day, we're pretty much going to be a loser in the Major League Baseball market for the day. But Phillies, we certainly have built up quite a significant liability on them to win the World Series and to win not only the division, the NL East. I mean, people did start to jump on them, especially when the Braves injuries started to pile up. But certainly the pennant, we have liability on them. And the same with the Mets and the Yankees. I mean, that's just usual, but with the way that the Yankees and Phillies have started out this season, they've continued to get bet. And, you know, a lot of that is casual money and just their, you know, hometown fans that come in here and back them with their dollars. But I will say the Mets, if I continue to see this Grimace thing where they're undefeated since Grimace throughout the first pitch, I mean, I've had enough of that.
Yeah, I'm over that. Well, we do have one more week with UTG until, as you kindly mentioned, I take a well-deserved break in July. So we will talk to you next week, and then it's going to be great to see you when you get out to Vegas in August. So enjoy the weekend, and thanks for the time. Appreciate you, TG.
All right. Thank you, guys. And, yes, I guess one more Palm versus the big guy before the break.
Yeah, well, and as you say, well-deserved break in July. Thomas Gable, yes. The Borgata Racing Sportsbook Director. Thank you, Thomas. Have a good weekend. Brought to you on the Progressive Guest Line. That guy, TG, has your back.
Big time. We know what team he's on. He knows he would buy my book about accident abstinence instead of Mike Palm's autobiography. We know that.
Accident abstinence? Is that what I can't? Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, you know what? Maybe I have been shortchanging you. Back with the NFL.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, you can become a VSiN Pro still with the spring special into summer. 13 months for $199, so you get a free month for $199. But you have to use the promo code SHARP when you go to VSiN.com/subscribe. You get the picks, you get the splits, you get the guides, you get everything we offer for $199, 13 months. SHARP is the promo code. VSiN.com/subscribe is where you sign up. Frank Amarante is going to be joining us at the bottom of the hour. This guy is good. He's got a bunch of baseball plays. He's got philosophy and strategy behind the plays, so can learn something while hopefully winning some cash with Frank. And then Mike Somich on a Friendship Friday in the third hour. That'll be interesting. Because there has been, I would say, I think more from the big guy's perspective than Somich's, but there's a little tension between the two of you, and I can't quite put my finger on it because you generally get along with everybody. But
I know what it is. I can tell you right now.
Go ahead.
I think he likes Matt Brown better than us.
Ooh. That's gives you that inkling?
Oh, I watch their show as I prep for Live Bet Sunday because, you know, Mike Somich hosts my pregame show to the big event, and I watch their chemistry. I watch the jokes they make. I think he has – remember, Josh Applebaum on the show yesterday ranks his friends. I think yes. Mike Somich went from only appearing on this show before he worked for VSiN, if we're being fair. Well, Lombardi Line, but that was with you. And now he's with Matt Brown on the weekends on the handle. And the vibe I'm getting is we've got dropped down a peg, and Matt Brown is now above us in the Somich friendship rankings.
Are you prepared? Because I can do it. Are you prepared to lay your case out when he comes on?
I think the fact that I feel we are better friends with him than Matt Brown, I have to prove that by having a tough conversation with my friend. Like, a real friend calls you out when you're not holding up your end of the bargain.
Correct.
And if we're going to be real friends here and I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, I believe we are, I'm going to have to discuss it with him.
Okay. And that's no knock against Matt Brown. We're just
great guy.
Territorial about friendship.
No, I'm friends with Matt Brown as well. I love Matt Brown. But, Somich, remember, we were friends first.
Yep. Okay. Well, he's going to be coming up. Let's get back to the NFL, and we'll go to the market. The one I had at three, again, we're talking about the best off seasons. Maybe it's not going to be as sexy as you think, but I think that the Houston Texans did pretty well this offseason. They were fortunate. First off, again, a lot of my stuff comes down to, I don't think people, I mean, you probably do realize, but the importance of consistency with scheme and coordinators, so important. And Houston was fortunate to retain its coaching staff through the head coaching hiring process. Of course, Bobby Slowick did a great job. Now, again, this even matters more because Stroud was a rookie and you want to continue to grow. Slowick, you know, most thought he was going to get a job. So to continue working with CJ Stroud, that's a big keep. The moves they made, they add difference makers. Joe Mixon, regardless of what you think of him, difference maker. And I'm not a huge Stephon Diggs guy, but if you get Stephon Diggs in a good mood where he's very sensitive and he knows people are watching and talking about him, he could go off. Okay. On defense, they added Danielle Hunter. And of course, pair him with Will Anderson Jr. I had the Houston Texans at three. Maybe a little bit of a surprise.
Okay, well, this is a transition because they're my number two team. So I agree with you. The Slowick thing, keeping Bobby Slowick as offensive coordinator, I think you make a strong case. Detroit keeping Ben Johnson and Houston keeping Bobby Slowick were the two biggest moves of the entire offseason. Those were two people that teams wanted to hire as their head coach. They're creative on offense. They got a lot out of quarterbacks in a surprise way last year. I think that is a number one with a bullet. The best move they made was retaining Slowick. Secondly, you mentioned the Diggs thing. Joe Mixon catching the ball out of the backfield is going to be big for a young Stroud because he's going to get attacked differently. The thing in the NFL, it's not about doing something once. It's about when everyone has tape on you and they adjust to what you like to do on offense, then how you counter that. And Joe Mixon, his ability to be a dual threat in this backfield, I think is going to help mitigate some of the issues that young quarterbacks struggle from year one to year two when the league is trying to figure them out some. But the biggest key to this whole thing for the Texans and their offseason to me is what they did defensively. You have a defensive head coach, and I know that it's sexy to talk about the offensive moves the Texans made in Mixon and Diggs and keeping Slowick, but D'Amico Ryan's got guys that fit what he wants to do on defense, similar to what he did with San Francisco. And speaking of the Niners, bringing in Jimmy Ward in the back end of that secondary to help integrate more of the San Francisco scheme in year two is going to be massive. Azeez Al-Shaair, who was in Tennessee last year, but also played under Ryan's in San Francisco, he's going to be pivotal in that as well. You also, when you think about what San Francisco does well, it's about getting a push on the front and edge rushers. Well, they address needs there with Autry coming in at defensive tackle. He is a very good, big, physical defensive tackle. And then you mentioned Danielle Hunter on the edge, one of the elite pass rushers. So while the offense is sexy and I think it's awesome, I think the D'Amico Ryan's fingerprints are all over the personnel that have been added to this defense. And I think the Texans are going to take massive strides on that side of the football.
That's a tremendous breakdown. Yeah, the Houston Texans, and they are your favorites in division. Win total set at 9.5. They're plus 105. They're 8.5-1 conference and 16-1 to win the Super Bowl. So you had them too?
They were two. But by the way, I'm talking about what they did. I'm not projecting the results because this division is brutal to figure out here. We mentioned the Jaguars earlier, where it feels like plus 275 feels really long on a super talented team. The Texans, we just went over, we both love their offseason. But the Colts? The Colts have a chance to do something crazy this year with Anthony Richardson coming back, if he can be what we think he can be, but also in that Steichen offense. And I think the wild card is, like, Steichen a year ago proved to be an awesome hire, a great head coach. I think if they made the postseason, you could have made a strong case he was coach of the year based on everything they went through. I just think that is a juggernaut of a top three in this division.
Yeah, that's very well put. So that was your two. My two, I think I'm now, having looked at my list, I may have maybe a little high, but the Philadelphia Eagles are my number two. And I know they lose Kelce, but they did, and maybe they overpaid for a few of the offensive linemen, but brought in some reinforcements. Obviously, you've been talking about it. You have them in the future for, I believe it's offensive player of the year in Saquon Barkley. Is he the missing piece? If he's healthy, he certainly could. Quinion Mitchell, the drafting Quinion Mitchell and Cooper DeJean kind of gives them insurance. You know, still have Bradberry and Darius Slay, but gives them insurance there. And then we come back to the coaching staff, where obviously something was amiss last year, not just on offense, but on defense as well. When they just hired from within with the coaching staff, something was off with Hurts. They bring in some dudes that have done it, obviously, in Fangio and your boy from Dallas to run the offense. So I think the Philadelphia Eagles, maybe at two, I have them a little high, but I thought they had a very good offseason.
Oh, I think you're crazy. I think you have them too low.
Ooh.
I think the Philadelphia Eagles are the most undervalued team in the betting market right now. When you look at what this team did, you mentioned the Fangio and Kellen Moore hires. It's very important to note, Nick Sirianni may or may not be a good head coach, but he definitely is an immature human being. We have a lot of evidence of that going back to when they lost the Super Bowl and him giving the finger to the Chiefs while they're celebrating. The way this team melted down on a human level down the stretch last year when they are so talented, you now have adults who don't put up with BS in the room in Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio. And they're just going to bring a level of confidence and professionalism that this organization desperately needs because they have a window here to capitalize. This is an extremely talented team. I think the Barkley signing is so massive, and I know people think it's crazy with his injury history to think that he can win Offensive Player of the Year. Well, he just got paid. Christian McCaffrey won Offensive Player of the Year after just getting paid some. So I think that's something you have to factor in. Some of the nicks and knacks and hits that he was taking where he wasn't going to play for the Giants, he's now going to play through with the Eagles because he secured the bag. And when we talk about what he's going to do for the Eagles as just a scheme thing, it is the greatest assembly of RPO weapons we've ever seen in a single offense. With Hurts' ability to move with the football and to not be taken down on first hit, faking or handing it to Saquon, throwing it to Saquon, but also Smith and Brown to stretch the field with Goddard over the middle. It is a perfect assembly of weapons, and I think this defense addressed their biggest needs, which was the secondary and bringing in Bryce Huff off the edge. I don't see the defense slipping. I think this team's winning the Super Bowl 15-1 for most wins in the NFL.
The big guy can't wait for the fall to get here. He is dialed in on the pigskin. You could tell he's feeling himself. I know that's right.
I know that's right.
Nick Amirante's coming up next with some baseball plays and some philosophy. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, it is VSIN.com where you should go bookmark right now. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides. It's all there. It's great on the mobile as well. Check out VSIN.com. Okay, these notes are exquisite. Frank Amirante, who's going to be joining us for the baseball season, thegameday.com senior sports writer at F. Amirante TFJ on Twitter. But what I like about the notes, we've got the picks. He's obviously heavy in the props in Major League Baseball, but then along with the picks, strategy as well. So Frank, thank you for all the hard work here. And we'll start. I guess we should just start. I know you're not a big hockey bettor, but what's the vibe in Canada getting ready? And you're up in Canada there. What's the vibe in Canada ahead of game 6 tonight in Edmonton?
Well, some Canadian hockey fans are like, no, we can't cheer for Edmonton. You know, we want our own Canadian city to win. But for me, I mean, how epic would it be if the Oilers are able to pull off this comeback with the best player in the world just carrying them, putting the team on his back? I'm cheering for it, to be honest. I'm against that, like, not going for Edmonton just because it's a rival. Honestly, bringing it back for game 6 is huge. It should be an interesting game. But I still lean like the Panthers will probably win. But hey, it's been nice that they've got it this far.
for our bankroll, I hope you're right about the Panthers. Okay, let's do this. I'll start with the strategy, and then we can apply it to the prop. So you said strategy one, find your favorite props the night before, and that lines up with Jordan Montgomery today.
Yeah, because if you're able to stay up late, often the MLB props are posted the night before around midnight. DraftKings is great with that. You're able to get a more favorable number, and it works. A perfect example is with Jordan Montgomery under 4.5 strikeouts. I got this late last night, minus 110. Now it's jumped in most spots, minus 150. And it's really because Jordan Montgomery has a 15% strikeout rate, well below league average. He's gone under 4.5 strikeouts in 9 of 11 starts. He's got a tough matchup on the road against the Phillies, who, against lefties at home, they've held opposing starters under 4.5 strikeouts in 10 of 12 games. So you combine the skills that Montgomery's shown, like he's struggled really with Arizona so far this year, add in the tough matchup, it's a good move. I still like it at minus 150, but it highlights how it's important to try to get those props early the night before if you can.
Yeah, big juice movement there. Great one. Strategy, fade cold offenses. And that brings us to the White Sox and Tigers tonight, Frank.
Yeah, we got a nice pitching matchup on tap with the White Sox and Tigers. Eric Fetty's been real rock solid for the White Sox. What a find from the KBO. His advanced metrics are nice, like his Sierra, which is a good indicator of pitcher performance, is around 3.6, which is rock solid. And you look at the Tigers, they have 3 runs total in their last 4 games. Add in the fact that Jack Flaherty is on the mound for Detroit. He's pitched like a complete ace this season, and home matchup against the White Sox lineup that's been terrible all year. It looks like a good spot for under 7.5. Now, I worry about the bullpens, of course, but I'm willing to go with the under 7.5 full game, or even if you want first 5, try to get it under 4, like a low scoring game there with the White Sox and Tigers.
Yeah, the Tigers. I'm a Tigers fan. It's an inept offensive team. It's hard to watch. Yeah. Okay, so White Sox Tigers under 7.5. We're talking to our buddy Frank Amarante. Let's get into the walk props. And you said, look, if you have elite command pitchers, don't be nervous about these walk props. Can you kind of elaborate there?
Yeah, so I like George Kirby under 0.5 walk. So if he walks 1, you lose. But this is the pitcher with the best command in baseball. I think his walk rate last year was around 2.5%. This year, it's more of the same. Now, I know I don't always take the under 0.5, but I will advise to do so when you get someone like George Kirby facing the very worst walk rate team in baseball in the Marlins. Marlins are by far, they have by far the lowest walk rate. They're like 1.5% lower than 29th. So they are a very free-swinging team, and an elite command pitcher like George Kirby, it's worth it to take the under 0.5 walks because we're getting around plus 125, which if you use an odds converter converts to about like 45% implied probability. But if you look at George Kirby's hit rate under 0.5 walks over the last 2 seasons, around 53%. So you get a bit of an edge, and given the matchup, feels like a nice play tonight.
Tremendous reason and breakdown handicapping here with Frank Amarante on Sharp Money. Next up, Let's go with your Brewers bet and kind of walk us through the thought process here.
Yeah, so I took the Brewers over 1.5 runs in the first 5 innings because I'm trying to target Dylan Cease, who's been great this season. But if you look at his last 7 starts, his ERA is over 6, 1.5 whip. He's allowed 2 or more earned runs in 6 of those 7 starts. You look at this Brewers lineup, it's pretty pesky. They walk a lot. You know, they're among the, I believe, top 15 in weighted runs created plus, which is a good stat that evaluates team offenses. All we need is 2 runs, and it's not really juiced. I got it around minus 115. It's really a low bar. So you could win this if Cease continues to struggle. Or, I mean, if he allows 2 runs in 5 innings, that's still pretty solid. So even if Cease is pitching relatively well, you still win this bet. So given Cease's recent struggles, I like the Brewers to go over 1.5 in the first 5 innings.
Brewers first 5 over. a run and a half. And finally, Frank, you got the Red Sox on the money line tonight, and you said ride the streak.
Yeah, you look what the Red Sox are doing lately. They've won 8 of their last 9 games, and 2 of those series were against 2 of the best teams in baseball, and the Phillies and the Yankees. You know, their lineup is healthier now with Tyler O'Neill back. They're taking on a Reds team that's lost 4 of their last 5 games, and Boston is sending out one of their aces. Like, Tanner Houck's been their best pitcher, but Cutter Crawford's not been that far behind, and he goes tonight, and he gives them a big edge on the mound ahead of Andrew Abbott, who... his surface level stats are pretty solid, like his ERA and WHIP. But if you look under the hood at his Sierra, it's a lot higher than what his ERA is, which indicates that we could see some regression for Andrew Abbott. And given the way the Red Sox are swinging the bats right now, it could come tonight in a hitter-friendly park in Cincinnati. Then you look at Cutter Crawford, last 2 starts, 2 walks, and I believe 17 strikeouts. He's locking in, and he gives them an edge on the mound. I like the Red Sox to keep it rolling.
Yeah, and I thought it was Cutter Crawford on Sunday night against the Yankees. I thought he pitched very well. It was Stroman that was struggling in that matchup.
Yeah, Cutter Crawford has been just rock solid. Just another testament to how good that pitching development team in Boston is with Andrew Bailey and company. They've done a great job with Crawford, Tanner Houck, and more. They've been a surprise team, really, the Red Sox have.
Wonderful. Well, great information. I like the idea of linking it to your strategy and your thought process. Frank Amarante, thegameday.com. He's a senior sports writer there at FAmaranteTFJ on Twitter. Well, enjoy the baseball, and I'm sure you'll be watching a little of the hockey tonight as well, Frank. Appreciate your time. We'll talk to you soon.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk soon. Take care.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the hard work because we have a lot of guests on the program, big guy, but the strategy, and of course, Frank was brought to you on the Progressive guest line. What new bettors and even seasoned bettors want to hear is they want to hear the thought process, not just the bets, and that's what he did here with the notes, which you love to see.
Yeah, what's it? Teach a man to fish, and you can eat sushi all the time or something like that?
Uh-oh. I knew we were headed down a weird path there.
I just feel bad because Frank is a really nice guy. And Canada just produces these great people. And I feel bad that we have to break their hearts tonight and be better at their sport than they are at it once again. Because 1993, long time ago, 1993, those kids born then, they're already graduating college. They're adults in the world.
So I said at the beginning of the program, we always have a theme. And I said, today is, you know, Friendship Friday. And it's time to rally the family. And then I said, someone, one of you, needs to pick me up today. And it does appear how hard you're going against Canada right now is kind of your way of saying, hey, I got you.
Well,
you're picking me up.
I've noticed there's a lot of build the wall trending on Twitter. But I'm wrong about the border it should be built on. They all want it built south. I want it built north. We build a wall to the north. Keep those losers out of our country. Name a war Canada fought in that America didn't have to help them win. Go ahead. They don't exist. They need us for everything. If we didn't exist, Canada would just be Mexico.
We just had a Canadian on, Frank. He did a great job.
And
you're killing him.
And that attitude of being a great person, being a nice guy, very humble, very, very friendly, is the reason why Mexico would take them over in 2 seconds.
See, I thought you would like Canada because they have stuff legal that you would like there.
That's fair too. Maybe it's just jealousy.
We'll continue looking back at the NFL and most improved teams. And then we've got Samich at the top of the hour. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. 0-0 in Germany with Netherlands, their FIFA's 7th ranked team in the world. And France, who's number 2. France is overrated. Mbappe I don't think he's playing. I know he didn't start the first half because that.
What happened to his face?
He took. Yeah, he took a shot in the last time out. So it's a 0-0 draw right now, 86th minute in Germany, in Euros. Hey, I have a question for you because I don't know this term. Dustin Swedelson, I'm Patrick Maher. We got you back. Samich is coming up in about 14 minutes. Looking forward to that on a family Friday.
I like when you do this because you have this assumption that like I'm more keen on pop culture than you, but I'm really not. I just spend a lot more time on TikTok. But go ahead.
Yeah, but I think because of the time you spent on social, you might know what this term means because I don't. I hear this term all the time. And, you know, it's like the Jets, Hassan Reddick, he's not with the team. And something just popped up that said the Jets, Hassan Reddick is in Japan, cosplaying. What does cosplaying mean?
Okay.
am I saying a bad term?
No, you're not. It essentially just means people dressing up. And if you go and you search his name on Twitter right now, it's funny. He's wearing like an old school like samurai type thing with a sword and a robe and a dress and the sandals. If you look at on Twitter for him right now. But cosplaying, there is a adult version of it as well where people do dress up in characters. There's cosplaying when it comes to anime. It just essentially means adult playing dress up.
But why would they do that?
Oh, they're taking shots. They're just really, he's not cosplaying. He's not. He's just actually blending in with the culture, technically.
No, but why would adults dress up and why would adults cosplay?
Because they want to be someone other than themselves. And it's a fantasy too. Not just sexual, but like just in general. Like the anime stuff is fantasy stuff.
I mean, you might call it boring, but my proclivities just don't go in that direction. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like you're just like missionary. Missionary.
No. First off, you just took a great leap there, which is it's a weird thing to say. What are you talking about? I just meant like dressing up and stuff. I said nothing about sex, Dustin.
Sorry.
You're an idiot. Samich said, big guy laughed like cosplay is a favorite search for him on some of his sites.
Shout out to Samich for showing up 13 minutes for his spot.
Dude, can I? Safe space?
Safe space.
I don't even think he considers us friends. He's playing with us. He's texting us before his hit to be like, hey, guys, I'm friends with you. What is he doing?
Do you know what that also
He's
is?
He's being obvious about not being friends.
But what's even more obvious about that move is we mentioned him earlier. He definitely wasn't listening earlier when we mentioned it.
He's
only checking in so he has a frame of reference because I do this when I lie all the time too and try to prove something that's not real. Is he's like, I'm going to watch 15 minutes before I appear, reference something they said so they know I'm a ride or die when I know Thomas Gable's the only ride or die I have.
Look, I didn't want to buy into your speculation on him.
It's not a good look.
The evidence is adding up. Is he cool with Halterman? Like, has he bailed on all his friends? How about him hitting us up with, hey guys, just organically listening to the show 6 minutes before he's supposed to come on? That's a little much.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, it's not my proclivity. I have many others that are much worse than cosplaying. Costumes are not my thing.
Oh, costumes.
It's just costumes.
That's the derivative.
Yeah, but I think
it's just people being idiots.
No, but it's more than the costume. It's acting like the character that you're dressed up as.
Isn't that Halloween? But now you're giving me an extra element. It's people being donks, like walking around in Pokemon costumes pretending to be a Pokemon.
Yeah, and I also believe like the people in the park who dressed up in like medieval stuff, they're also technically cosplaying.
I guess you could say it's technically like Samich dressing up as a friend. I mean, it's a terrible job. And again, there's weird tension with you and Samich, so I've been trying to like keep the vibes high.
No.
But I'm not coming to your side.
My energy's never changed. I love Mike. but I think it's very clear that Mike has Matt Brown ranked above us right now. That's all. That's just if I'm being fair.
Tough times. But you're going to cook him when he comes on. My number one offseason, I don't know how you could have it any differently. And this is the answer. Don't believe what anybody tells you. It's the Chicago Bears. Now, they were in your top five, not number one for you. But they had, look, just starting with the decision on what you were going to do with Fields, obviously you were going to take Caleb Williams one overall. But moving on from kind of just the vibes of, and Fields, I think, has a chance to be a starting quarterback. But moving on from the pick was something they kind of, it's almost like a metaphorical thing. You had to get past that. And Caleb Williams, face of the franchise, organization, they did everything in their power to surround him and put him in the antithesis as far as spots as where Fields was when he got there. Obviously, DJ Moore was there. His collection of pass catchers is going to be ridiculous. Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze, Cole Kmet. They added DeAndre Swift. I still don't look. You're higher on Saquon Barkley than I, but I didn't understand Philly moving on from DeAndre Swift, but he's a playmaker in the backfield. The defense, and it's a 7-win team. This is a 7-win team. You don't have generally 7-win team, but because of the trade, they had the number one overall pick. So it was already a team with some infrastructure, and the defense showed growth in that second half of the year. They keep Eberflus. I think there's a little bit of an Eberflus glow up. And do you remember when I thought it happened? It was Kaylee Hartung interviewing him, either going into the tunnel at halftime or coming out of the tunnel. And he got caught. And he just let an answer rip. And it was the most normal we had ever seen him. And he came across as cool, confident, and secure. And all of a sudden, since then, they've been on a freaking heater. And obviously, they were set up perfectly in the draft with the two first rounders. But yeah. I best off season. I go to the Bears here, and they're sitting on the board 8.5. And again, they're not even that long of a number in division. That shows you the turnaround.
Well, he said,
great off season.
What he said at halftime of that game on Amazon Prime was he was excited for the second half because the Bears had some things up their sleeve. That's what he said.
That's what it was.
And if he's being fair, he knew they had plenty up their sleeve, like having the number one pick and then taking Odunze also in the top 10. And this is a team where the defense was awesome a year ago. Let's not forget about that. He's a defensive guy. His defense was great. Montez Sweat has fit in perfectly there. Obviously, they made a couple key moves two off seasons ago with the linebacking core getting better with Edmonds and Edwards coming from Philly and Buffalo. They have a top-tier corner in Jalen Johnson. But the offseason, Kevin Byard, shore up that secondary, really that final piece on the defense. But it's the offense. The offense is going to actually move the ball. It's going to be exciting. It has a chance for big plays down the field at Soldier Field, something we have not experienced. And I think the Keenan Allen, him being a veteran, everything he went through in L.A. is going to be so massive for Caleb Williams getting adjusted. I love everything about this offseason.
Yeah, I totally agree. Concur with everything you said. But what's also funny about Samich is he kind of dipped into the friendship because obviously he's coming on the show, which we appreciate.
Yeah.
He lets us know all the time how hard he grinds. The thing about Samich is he also just low-key just dropped that you're a freaky deek and you like cosplay in bed.
Yeah, but I would also say if he thinks he's breaking news on that, I think everyone was pretty like sure that that's what's going on. But I hate to disrupt the rumors here if that's what everyone's talking about behind my back, but like it's not true.
Not your thing.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I can't get anyone to do the regular version with me. How am I going to get someone to dress up like a dog?
Maybe that's where you need a little more creativity.
Yeah, no, maybe this is something I need to dip my toe into. Maybe we're opening up a new world.
Wait, hold on a second. So there's a cosplay in a dirty sense where people dress up like dogs?
Well, that might
be
just
what you're telling me?
That might just be furries. I don't know if furries fall under the cosplay category.
What the hell is a furry?
People who dress up in like soft stuffed animal style I don't even know how to explain it.
You made that up. There's no such thing.
It's a real thing. And I might have to become
You're
one.
Telling me there's something called Furies and people dress up as stuffed animals.
Furry. Like fur.
Furries.
Yes.
Like a McFlurry. Furry.
Furry.
All right. Well, Mike is next on a Friendship Friday.